I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Here we are, That Thing I Do podcast. Wow.
Guess what? The tables have turned.
How the tables, they have turned.
Tables have turned.
I am...
You know what?
Fully recovered.
We haven't been in the same room, and I still
know,
got what you got.
I know. You know, it's going around. We all just have to be careful. We got to wear masks.
Yeah. Thank God it's not the COVID, guys. I've been tested. But I just got back stateside. We'll do this very quickly. I ran myself ragged in France, but I'm back, and, you know, I had a good time, so my body caught up with me. I'm a little sick, but I'm a little better now, but I'm feeling extra good because Esty managed to get another cool person this week. I'm a big fan of his. Of course, he's a friend of Esty's because he is a fellow bass player, a fellow Los Angelino. I don't know. You could tell his whole dossier to our listeners, Esty, if you want.
The interview that we had today with Steven Thundercat. You can tell how much I love him. I've been in love with him since I was, you know, 25 years old. And I'd heard about him, you know, when I was in high school and how talented he was. But he's also just like the best guy. And he's, you know, one of my best friends. I love him so much.
He's part of this like Mount Rushmore of like really top dog musicians. And as such, gets to kind of cross pollinate between a lot of different genres. Like, you know, he can like call upon like Michael McDonald's and like Kenny Loggins and do a song with them, but then like also play with, you know, and be really involved in, you know, I mean, he was a huge part of To Pimp a Butterfly, which is a, you know, prodigious hip hop album from 2015 for which he won a Grammy for These Walls. If you're a Kendrick Lamar fan, he also just recently won the Grammy for this past year in 2020 for his album. It Is What It Is for best progressive R&B album. Pretty incredible musician.
Yes.
I don't really know what to say. Pretty cool dude. I was psyched that we got to talk to him. I didn't get to ask him about his boy band. Was it a boy band?
No.
Should I say that? Am I allowed to say it's a boy band? I felt like if I asked, he would have thought I was uncool.
No, it wasn't a boy band. It was like a early 2000s rock band that he was in with his friends.
Okay.
But the cover art does...
Look, if you're young and you're good looking and you're in a band, it's just that if you're boys, it's what happens,
you know?
I guess. So that's unfair. Forgive my...
How uncouth of you, Darren.
Yeah, that was
how
very uncouth.
No, he was in a rock band with his friends called No Curfew. And at the same time that I was in a band with my sister called the Valley Girls. So there's so many idiosyncratic things that, you know, Steven and I have kind of gone through in our lives. We're very, very similar. I obviously love him and care for him like very, very, very much. So I'm so glad we got him on the pod. Let's get into it.
Yeah, I think he's one of the great musicians out there, artists. We talk about anime, Japanese culture, music, drawing. Let's get into it with...
That Thing I Do.
Thundercat.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Steven Thundercat Bruner, a.k.a. just known as Thundercat. Also known as just Thundercat. Everybody, welcome Thundercat.
What's up, man? Welcome.
Yeah, also known as Make a Decision, Steven.
Yeah, also, why are we saving
it? Is it Thundercat?
Who's on the poster behind you, man? Who is that? What do we got?
That's Esty.
That's Esty. I figured that was the anime version of Esty. I was just wondering where I was, that's all. You know, I was wondering, because I know we go back...
You might be on his shirt. What's on your shirt, Steven?
Yeah, let's see what's going on. What are we rocking there? Oh,
yeah,
I was going to say, I'm like a Ryu. I was literally, holy shit. holy shit, I was literally going to say, if you've got like Ryu somewhere, all I got to do is wear a fucking red headband.
You go.
And we're all good. Man.
That's
Ryu.
Like the one thing, I don't want to blow up Steven's spot, but one of my favorite things about hanging out with Steven is we just watch cartoons and anime, and he has a plethora of toys, literally like a museum, like museum worthy amount of, you know, Dragon Ball Z, Pokemon. What are some of your other favorites, Steven?
Oh my gosh, it's just
I know you're an encyclopedia when it comes to anime.
Well, we got a lot to talk about, because I've done a lot in anime. I've had a lot of really fun, cool shit, and I just did a show that Flying Lotus did the score for. And I know
Which
you
one?
Guys do a lot together. Yasuke. I did this anime Yasuke for Netflix.
What did you do on Yasuke?
I was the voice of Haruto. He was like the sort of mech robot guy that was part of the team. But LaShawn Thomas is a really good friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
We became pals years ago because I reached out to him after he was one of the artistic directors on Korra.
Nice.
And so I hit him up because I was like, yo, you're really amazing. I heard you're like, you live in LA. And we just became fast friends years ago. And ever since then, he's always kind of, you know, included me on fun things. And I've literally watched him from the beginning of this thing to coming out. You know, I was with him in Tokyo maybe like 2 years ago.
Nice.
But I've had a long history with watching that thing get made. So by the time he told me that you guys were working on, I was like, sick, fuck yeah. I get like a mini sideways collab with fucking Flying Lotus and Thundercat. This is sick.
Nice, good. Always do everything half-assed. Can't fully do it.
Yeah, exactly.
If you fully commit, then you're a complete asshole.
So are you a big Japanophile guy? Are you like a big, have you always been like, I guess the word is, I guess the pejorative is weeb. That's what I've been told I am. I guess that's like the, if you're like a total, like a Japan nerd. I think that's like a mean phrase for it. I wouldn't consider myself a weeb, but I definitely am a Japanophile. Japanese history and culture, anime. Have you always been one of those guys?
Essentially, yeah. Like, let me see, where do I begin with this?
Yeah, where did it start for you, Steven?
I mean, it's
real. We've sort of talked about this before.
It's realizing that all of our cartoons were Japanese when we were kids, even if we didn't realize they were Japanese, you know, outsourcing Japanese animators and stuff. So everything from He-Man to G.I. Joe to Jim and the Holograms, Thundercats, it was all Japanese animators, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, realizing that at a way older age as compared to actually coming into Japanese as a pop culture with cartoons and stuff like that, the minute you get introduced to Dragon Ball Z or like, you know, so many other things like Gundam or Saint Seiya or, you know, a lot of their stuff, the Astro Boys, the Devilmans and all that stuff. And you're just kind of like, realizing that it's always been there as compared
right,
to being like, you know, and this is the moment. It was like, oh, actually it was like somebody spoon feeding you vegetables and you're like, I thought it was candy. You know, it's just like, yeah, that was the whole point. Make you think it was candy. But it was just like, I've always, you know, been, you know, enthralled by, you know, the Japanese culture, you know, like, again, especially based on the type of bullshit that happened with us. And, you know, like there's no way it's not, it doesn't incorporate itself into it to some degree, you know, like the history of what it's been. And it's one of those things though, that when you get it, it just has to do with, I think a lot of the time with the cartoons, they give the kids a lot more credit than most people do. You know what I mean? Like the children,
totally.
The part where Dragon Ball Z was something that, or Fist of the North Star was something you would watch on TV, and it's violent in nature and very sexual in certain respects. But there's a part of it where, It's a bit of a weird double-edged sword of how it plays against the society and everything that, you know, that it comes from, you know, where it stems from. But at the same time, it's like, it feels like it was giving a lot of credit to people's ability to process. It's something that that doesn't come natural in I'll call it Western, you know, ways of processing stuff, you know, like separating this and, you know, it's a weird dynamic. So it's like, I don't know, like, Dragon Ball Z was definitely the introduction to realizing Japanese, you know, anime and, you know, that part of the pop culture and how big, and it almost feels like even the way that they produce the stuff, it just is like they make it really good for themselves. And by way of them making it good for themselves, it translates around the world. You know, like, I think that's why it's a deal, you know?
There's sort of a crossover between a lot of the artisanship of specifically anime that hit, if you grew up in the 90s, in a way that, I don't know, like, I feel like our generation specifically has, if you're keen on anime, I don't know about you, man, but for me, I always liked anime, but it wasn't until, like, there was a hip hop crossover that I started going like, oh, okay, cool. Because you start, you, like, Wu-Tang starts have, like, there was this sort of inextricable, like, bond. Like, I never thought that the two were not part of the same coin. Mm-hmm. Like, I was into Wu-Tang, and then I was really into, like, when Samurai Champloo and Afro Samurai and all this cool shit where, like, the underscoring was all this great hip-hop. All the shit that I thought was cool hip-hop was connected to anime. And then I realized later in life being like, wait a second, they weren't always part of the same thing. So it's interesting for me because I always, my gateway into specifically anime was American music. And it's like a cool, weird back and forth that West and East tends to have between music and, like, animation and shit. So that's why it's pretty dope that you just liked it on just like between, I guess a lot of people grew up in Dragon Ball Z and that was it, right? It's like, this is the shit. Goku's my guy. This is it.
Yeah.
But, it took music for me to get into it.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, it was, the music was kind of like, it was a plus. Cause I mean, kids like me and Esty, we were already kind of like, oh yeah, check Korea. And you know, we were doing that, mm-hmm. You know, it's like the music kind of came along. You know, that was still a bit later to me. So by the time we get to a Samurai Champloo, and I remember buying that when it first came out on DVD at Suncoast Video, it more so pushed me in the direction of realizing who's the guy that directed this. Because, like, who's the guy that was smart enough to do that? Realize, like, connecting those dots in pop culture. It was kind of like, hey, here we go, Shinichiro Watanabe. And you go, well, what does he do? And you go, Cowboy Bebop. And you go,
dude, Yoko Kano. Kano, bro.
Yeah.
That shit. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yoko Kano is this, like, iconic. She's the band leader, composer, instrumentalist of this group called the Seatbelts. And it's this, like, super fucking burning, like, I want to say jazz combo, but it's like a whole orchestra, like, essentially.
Like an orchestra?
Not super big band, but it's like hot, like, you know, like mid, yeah, like you just said, ensemble, but it's more like, yeah, like it's big band a bit.
Feels it's a big band shit. Okay. And it's just like super high functioning musicianship, scoring all this, like, cool post-apocalyptic futurescape cyber, like, world, but with like postmodern bebop. It's so fucking cool. When I was in high school, I saw that I was like, this is the, again, it was the music for me. It was like the confluence of these two, like, I like the right. art style, but the music being this gateway drug, and I'm like, yo, these are things that I never thought could be, like, together, which, again, is so great about so many things in Japanese culture, where they'll take two things, like something that's old and something that's new. I mean, that's like the backbone of a lot of Japanese culture, is smashing old and new together in a way to make something really, really unique. Anyway, I interrupted you, Steven. You were talking about bebop and
No. That's how it's supposed to be, man. This is what happens when you start talking to anime nerds. We get, you know, get a boner, and then it's kind of like,
I knew this was going to happen. I knew it.
Yeah. Yoko Kano. If our listeners don't know, we just mentioned a few, like, heavy hitters, like Cowboy Bebop, which is turning into, I think they just finished the live action thing for Netflix that's coming out.
You know.
Definitely worth checking out. But the Seatbelts, for sure. Definitely check out the soundtrack for Cowboy Bebop.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
I wanted to touch on, because obviously Steven is such a an anime file and is so well versed in all of it. I think the thing that I found the most interesting after talking with Stephen about this before was this idea that Stephen really wanted to be like an animator or an artist. And I don't know if a lot of people know that about him. And he's really, really talented. And that was something that he really wanted to do. And I think that also goes along with kind of the theme of everything that we've been kind of talking about on this podcast is like, usually if you're talented at like one thing in the arts, there's also cross-section in something else artistic.
Do you illustrate? Do you draw at all, man?
Well, it's funny.
He's gonna be reluctant to talk about it, but I think.
Yeah,
I have a
strong feeling. I think you know what the fuck is up because it's either a hard no, or nothing. Like if you're gonna even like say kinda, that means yes. Because I can't fucking draw. If you ask me if I draw, I go absolutely.
I can't
not.
Draw. And my mom's an artist. So I can tell. Like my mom is a painter. Like my mom was an art teacher, and I can draw like a toothpick with grapes, like a stick figure. Like that's what my shit looks like. Like that's SDB thinking she's Picasso. Like I don't have, there's not like a fine art bone in my body, even though my mother is like an amazing painter. And like, so that was always like, I was like, oh, I can't do that. Like that's, I'm not as good as my mom. Even though I always had an appreciation for art, it wasn't like I could ever do it. And I knew that I wasn't good at it. And still to this day, I'm not good at it. But I think as a kid, like, I think that either someone comes along and is like, oh, wait, you're really good at that. You should keep doing that. And I think art is a really good, like when you're like in preschool and you're like drawing shit, like you can see like which kids kind of
this person can vision stuff.
Yes, I can. Like, and I was not, I think they, I don't know what people in my preschool thought, but I thought that I was talented for like making sure that the sun was yellow. Like that,
I mean,
to
that's
me was
a start.
That was a big win for me.
So what was first? Yo, Stephen, where did you start with drawing or did you start with music, man?
I think honestly, it's like, it's, I don't remember a time I wasn't drawing when I was younger, at the same time that I learned how to, you know, pick up an instrument and stuff like that. And my mom still has all my earlier drawings from this, you know, like when I was a baby and I couldn't really, you know, and, you know, she, you know.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird. You know, I mean, it's not weird, but it's just like, you know, it's like, you know.
Wait, I want to see that.
Yeah, she wrote my like name and age on it. You know, it's just like a weird, you know, like, you know, affinity for it a bit. And it's kind of like, it's kind of like, I feel like drawing for me is like that thing where you have that friend that you don't know that they smoke cigarettes. It's like, you know, you can't, you know, you say you're going to leave their house for a second and then, you know, you come back because you forgot your keys and then the whole house is
and
like this. And it's just like, yeah, it's like it always was a bit emotional for me. So there's a part of it where it's like the place that it's connected to is not exactly something that I would tell somebody out front, you know, but it's like a lot of the time, it's like, when I was younger, I wanted to go to Fairfax because I know that's where a lot of like,
all the art kids went.
Yeah, all the art kids went. And I was like, I want to go draw. I'm like, fucking Dragon Ball Z is fucking awesome. And then, you know, and it's like music, again, it's just, it was one of those things where music, I think, was definitely took precedent because it was just like, I feel like, even though I had outlets for it, you know, like I went to 32nd Street USC Middle School when it was a magnet school and magnets existed. And, you know, it was like, I was one of those kids that was like, fail at everything else, but it was art. It would just be like, where are we supposed to put this person? Because this is like, I would get double the assignments because the teacher would be annoyed with how quickly it would happen or something like
wow.
that.
Wow.
With drawing, with art, with like visual
art. Yeah, with art.
Yeah, specifically with art.
That's crazy. Wow.
And, but it was one of those things where, yeah, it just kind of like, it's a bit more emotional for me. And it's like, it takes kind of like a lot of coercing and, you know, do something, you know, but every night, you know.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think it's more of an emotional thing than music? Because a lot of people would argue it's the opposite.
No, I think Stephen's right. I think it is more emotional. Yeah. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Stephen, but I always talk about how like when you perform something or you like you perform a song or whatever, it's like a moment in time and it happens and then it's done.
Yeah.
And then you can like do it again if you want the next day. And like it's this thing. And unless you're like recording it like on a record, like you can do it as many times as you want and you make the record and you make the song. But like if you're performing live, you know, it happens. It was a moment in time.
Yeah.
Might have fucked up, but whatever.
Exactly.
You have the performance. But with art, it's like, this is the thing.
Yeah.
This is my drawing. This is a definitive piece of a thing. And like, and no one's really going to, I mean, I don't think that people are going to ask you to like recreate that. It's its own thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
So like, I can understand how it's more emotional to do that because, you know, again, it's like, it's not like it's just a snapshot. It's like, no, this is like the thing that I'm going to hang in this house or it's going to be in an attic.
Yeah. Or, it has
you know,
a weird
like, it's a tangible thing. It's like a thing that you can touch and feel. It's not just this like,
I
guess you could argue that like a CD or a record is like a tangible thing, but it's not the same.
Yeah. It's a different site part of the brain, I think. And a lot of the time, like some of the things that I do remember when it came to drawing, it would be like, I think one real intense memory I have of it was like, my cat got hit by a car when I was a kid. And I found my cat on the way to school, back in the middle of the street, dead.
No.
Well,
I've seen this Pixar movie. That's like the first 5 minutes of the next Pixar movie.
Where they set up.
And, oh man.
But then my mom is like, I couldn't sleep. And so what would happen is I would kind of like wait till everybody went to sleep. And I would just kind of sit up and draw and listen to Jaco Pastorius. And my mom would wake up and be like, why are you still awake? Go to bed. And I'd be like, okay. And I'd act like I was going to go to sleep. And then I'd just get back up and keep listening to Jaco. And I would be drawing. And then, you know, a couple of days would pass or whatever. And my mom may see me sitting out drawing. And then she would kind of thumb through my stuff and be like, what the heck is all of this? And I'd be like, leave me alone.
Aww. Steven, wow. I wish we were friends back then because I had no one to sit and listen to Jaco with.
Yeah, no, that's
a beautiful thing.
When
man.
I was a kid. That's really sweet.
I gotta ask, were the drawings things that were kind of coming from, you know, like a personal place, or were you kind of like mimicking like some of the anime maybe that was influencing you, or were you just kind of creating, what was your style at the time?
I mean, it would be, you know, you can't help but be influenced by like, you know, the things that you see. Again, pop culture, you know, it rules, so to speak, you know.
Right.
Of course, like, you know, action heroes you know, like Jack Kirby's influence on the world is still like the shot heard around the world. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
You know, and it's like there's always that, you know, the superhero, the cape and cowl. But then there's also like growing up in the era of how big like hip hop, like you were saying, like graffiti and stuff like that. And somewhere between the things that they try to teach you in school, where it's like still life to figure painting, all this different stuff, it's a bit intersectional in that respect, where it would be like, you know, somewhere between, you know, self drawings or like things that really did, you know, the things that you actually would like you know, like items or things or the way things will make you feel a certain way, you know, how do I project this idea in illustration? Like, you know, like how do I drawing Stanley Clark? Like, you know, how would I draw Stanley Clark? It's like, there's a part where you could draw a portrait, but then there's a part of like, how do I see him? You know, and it's like, it's not just the bass player. It would be like, you know, this guy's from, he's not here. He's on in another place, you know, and, you know, trying to create that, you know, like you were saying, making that into a tangible. And so a lot of the time, you know, it's like, I would have lots of different types of stuff happen. I grew up around a lot of graffiti artists. I was a graffiti artist at one point, yada, 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 you know? And I remember there would be times where, like, you know, we would pass art books around, but for some reason, everybody's art books would come back except for mine. And then every now and again, you know, I would be driving around and I would see a character I drew and somebody had, when I was younger.
No way.
Yeah. And it would be like,
that's cool.
I remember I had a teacher named Miss Motivali, that was my art teacher in high school. And I remember I got real bummed out about that because I was like, you know, the giving of what you do, you know, and I'm like, man,
yeah.
And she would be like, what happened to your art book? And I was like, somebody stole it. And then I told her about, like, I would tell her stuff that would happen. You know, like somebody, I saw somebody draw something. She said, I think she saw the same mural that had the book, the characters that were in my book.
Right.
And she kind of told me, and it kind of stuck with me forever. She said, you know, imitation is the biggest form of flattery or something like that. And it made me feel better about the part where like my shit was just gone. And so it would just be like,
right.
You know, it stayed with me. And it's like, instead of looking at it like something that was more of a like whack moment as compared to like, you know, it's where it's supposed to be. And, you know, right. A lot of the time, I think that's
a very evolved way to look at it, man.
I know, pretty, especially pretty as wise. Like a kid.
I know, like the wisdom is like coming right off of you right now, especially if we're talking about a kid like doing art. I would have been like, fuck yeah. These guys
yeah.
taking my shit. And you're like, no, it's okay, man. It found a place, you know, it's like sort of a community, you know, art is a conversation, you know, everybody owns a piece of everything, you know.
Yeah,
but I think, Stephen, I feel that way about music too. When I hear people like ripping Haim yeah. stuff,
yeah.
I'm kind of like, that sounds like us, or that I, yeah. or, you know, I'm just like, if anything, I'm kind of, I look at it as flattery too. I'm like, that's really cool, especially if I like the song.
Art will always be interpretation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that like now where it's just like, now there's art books just flopping around the house. There's a part of it where it's just, I don't know. It's like, it's extremely temperamental. You know, it's like it's the white, with the blank sheet of paper thing is really a lot, you know, because it's like I spend so much time more being a songwriter. And, you know, in that weighs a lot in itself, you know, and it's like, you know, it's but whenever it does come out, it comes out like vomit a bit.
Totally.
This brings up a couple interesting questions, because we were talking about listening to Jocko and having art books and stuff. And I remember a lot of my good friends that are illustrators and are really good at art, they all have like those kind of very famous art books. There's a lot of like key, in the same way that we talk about like key records that you got to have, like you,
yeah.
you know, just like the pantheon of records everybody must know. There's a few like drawing books that through the years people have used that are kind of like the staples of how to draw.
Really? And I think a lot I know of none of them.
I couldn't name them. I'm sure Steven could, but especially for comic book artists, there's like a lot of like key figures. And yeah. I know that, you know, kids will spend time like copying people's lines and their styles, or this dude does this one way, or this chick, she always has this. And there's like the jazz standards, as it were, for
yeah.
drawing.
Yeah.
And then from there, you kind of create your own style, right? Like the idea is you kind of like, this is the thing I always say about making music or making anything, in failing to be your heroes, you become your own hero, right?
Yeah.
You do your own thing in an effort, in an inevitably failed attempt, we'll never be our heroes, but our heroes will never be us, right? So
yeah,
it's like,
true.
Yeah.
You'll
yes.
always fail at being these people. So I guess what I'm saying is, in the same way that you're drawing stuff and finding your own voice, you know, as a bass player and as a musician, you know, you're a kid listening to Jocko, that's some pretty, you know, sophisticated shit. And, you know, when you're starting off as a musician, did you find yourself early on kind of emulating those sounds and that kind of progressive bass playing? Or was it something that, I don't know, I guess I'm trying to, the parallel I'm trying to paint is a lot of the shit that you're talking about that influenced you really early, were you kind of reaching for that, or were you trying, did you want to do something that was a little different? I don't know. I guess, where did you find your own shit in between all of this?
Again, like we were saying, like with the concept of the interpretation and how, you know, like learning in different respects, it kind of brings it can't be helped that almost like everybody has their own fingerprint, regardless if you how it comes about, it's the inevitable that it will still be your voice at some point, you know. And I remember when I was younger, people, you know, every now and again, you know, you have a friend or a person that listens to music or something, then like you sound like Jocko, you know. At one point it was one of those things where it it develops its own voice based on literally the life and time of who I am, you know. But it's one of those things where, I don't know, I being forgiving of moments like that and knowing that growth is only, like, you know, like, it's like a school of fish. When you think about fish swimming and you're like, how do they know to swim in the same? It's just like, you know, that we have our versions of that, that, you know, yeah. the minute you put like a dollar to something, it immediately separates it from whatever, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
it's unnatural when you put this certain thing on it. But at the same time, there's things that genuinely come natural like that, that are not so much of a weird thing. And I think that with the drawing, if you're asking me as far as references to like different things? Are you asking me things that influence me or like people that would bring that about for me?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there's a lot of influences coming at you. And I was wondering if were they all like if they had any relationship to each other? Like,
oh, yeah.
So if like as a bass player, there's a sophistication and a way that goes in your drawing, or if drawing suddenly goes into your music, you know, like
being a kid listening to Jaco Pastorius is like not a normal thing.
Yeah,
it's just not.
And you're listening
it
to
just isn't.
Well, I think all creative credits transfer. You know what I'm saying? So it's like if you're like a really great chef, you have a gift for being like knowing how to put food together. Like
right.
that may transfer to the way that you see where couches go in a room. Because you're kind of thinking about balance and shit and where places go. So I'm wondering if there was certain things about the things that you were drawing or the anime that you were watching that made you want to create a music or vice versa, right?
That's like, a good question.
I'm wondering if there's things that you saw at an early age where you're like, nah, this is the same piece of me.
Yeah. Like one of my favorite artists when I was a kid was Joe Jusco. And it's naturally because, you know, like I was saying, you grow up in the Marvel age. I want to call it the golden age of Marvel because the silver age is back in the 60s, I would say. But like we grew up in the golden age.
Totally.
And yeah, you know, and, you know, I would be sitting and listening to music and I would be looking at Joe Jusco's drawing of the 1992 Marvel masterpieces or Jim Lee. You know, Jim Lee, again, definitive artist.
I'm looking up Jusco shit right now. I'm like, this guy. I know this guy.
Yeah, Rob Liefeld. Yeah. You know,
this dude's a legend. Yeah. Oh man, these are super. You know, these are super famous. Yeah, yeah.
Mike Turner, and you know, there's a few to name a few, and as of course,
yeah, you're an artist, man. You're a visual artist. You can't laugh up. Be like, I don't draw. Like, of course you do. You know all these motherfuckers' names. Like, Jesus Christ.
This is Bill Sinkel.
I told you he's an encyclopedia.
Wait, I don't want him to get off the path. You were saying that you were listening to music. You were looking at Jusco shit, and you were listening to music, and that was going somewhere.
No, I would just go between playing and drawing and listening and tripping off of the textures of the stuff. And, you know, I mean, like, how do you create a character? You know, it's like it was completely intersectional, you know, and I think that somehow at some point it's where the music would take off more. It would become more of a voice through my instrument.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I was healthy enough a couple days ago to go see Steven at the Hollywood Bowl, and he crushed.
How was that, man?
It was
when
so
was that?
Good. It was Sunday, this past Sunday. It was Kamasi Washington.
Was it just you, man?
No, it was Kamasi. And I told Steven I had this crazy moment. I was in the audience and I was like, it was so inspiring. I was having the best time. And then Kamasi said, like, and we have Khalil Cummings on percussion.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute. What? I was like, I know Khalil Cummings.
Yeah.
I was like, I went to middle school with him. We were like really good friends, and I hadn't seen him since like literally since the year 2000. Had not.
Is this some more LA shit? Is this, dude,
more
every
LA
time we
shit.
Do this.
It's like more LA shit.
Wait, hold on a sec. Steve, are you from LA too?
Yes,
yes.
Sir.
God damn it. God, I know. Damn it.
Yeah, Steven is an LA legend. That's why, that's again,
damn
why
it.
We connect,
I can't stand it.
On so many levels. I love even it. Though I'm a Valley yeah. kid. I'm a Valley kid.
Yeah, I'm from Compton.
And Steven's from Compton.
But the LA area thing, like the LA musician yes. thing, is a real
and
fucking wow.
I grew up amazing. Hearing about Steven. I grew up hearing about Steven just because I went to an arts high school, and a lot of the kids, a lot of the jazz kids at my school saw Steven at like competitions and stuff and were like, this fucking sick bass player named Steve Bruner fucking
crushed. That sounds like all my friends in high school.
Yeah, literally. Like, and they were just like, oh, dude, this guy. Like, literally, Sunday. It was like, and as like a 17-year-old, I feel like I saw videos of Steven playing at like Catalina's and like the Baked Potato. Does that make sense? Like in high school?
Yeah. Yeah.
You were playing Baked Potato when you're in high school?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
fuck
yeah.
You. That's so
yeah.
cool.
I remember
That's
seeing
so cool.
videos of that as like, I mean, Steven and I are the same age. I remember seeing that at 17 and being like, maybe I should just hang up this fucking bass now.
No.
Like, maybe it's time. Like, it was a marvel to witness. And so, yeah. So I saw Steven play again. I was awestruck. I saw him play at the Bowl this past weekend. And I had the best fucking time. And it was super inspiring. Everyone in the audience was having the best time. It was also just really nice to be outdoors and see music again.
I'm glad to know the Bowl's doing shows, man. There was like the one venue that when
shows.
The pandemic happened, I was like, that makes, wow, it's outside and it's massive. Can't you just like let a quarter of the people in and still be, well, I guess it would be, the operations are expensive. You got to have it before.
Yeah,
to, like,
that's the
it.
Problem.
It's complicated.
It's complicated. Yeah. But yeah, and I'm looking forward to seeing Steven play. Steven's doing a solo show. Wait, can I talk about that, Steven? Is it
yeah.
out in the open? Steven's doing a show at the Shrine. In November, and I will
fuck
be
yeah,
front
I'll be
center.
There with bells on, man. I love a good Thundercat show. I'm very excited. I'm just glad that you're playing again. That's amazing. I mean, how has this pandemic been for you, man? I mean, I think for a lot of musicians, myself included, SD2, it's been really nice to just kind of, you know, fuck around with your shit at home and kind of, you know, get some of the ideas out that you've been mucking around with for a while. I don't know if it maybe, I mean, obviously it's, there's plenty to be, that was shitty, but was it a good time for you creatively, or was it a nightmare? How was it?
Well, to be honest, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's a part of it where, you know, creative energy doesn't really stop. It just, you know, it happens how it happens. And in this specific, like, in this specific thing for me, it, you know, especially based on how the album was like a lot, to say the least, emotionally.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Big congratulations.
2020's
progressive.
What category was it? Progressive R&B. Fuck yeah, man. Love the record.
So well deserved.
Big fan of the fucking, the first track, when I got the record, the first track I listened to was a song called I Love Lewis Cole. Because I remember, because I love Lewis Cole. This guy is a fucking freako musician. I yep. follow like all of the like crazy insano musicians of the internet. Always been a big fan of his. And it's just a song that sounds like if you love Lewis Cole, yeah. that's yeah. what it would sound like.
That's what it sound like.
And he got a 100%. Fucking Grammy for it. So congrats,
it's
man.
So
it's
so
well
good.
Deserved.
Steven, true or false, when I got the record, did I not say this is the best record of the year?
You did.
To you.
Yeah.
It's the best record of the year.
Thank you, SD. I love you.
It's so good. It's so good. I love it so much.
But you were done. So were you working on it? No, you were releasing it through the pandemic, right?
Or, yes. Or, we both yeah. released records in the middle of the pandemic.
Jesus.
Never again.
Imagine the like, you know, like, you know, like those scenes in like the Looney Tunes where it's like, you know, Yosemite Sam is like somebody just blows a cannonball through his boat and he's just like, well, I was like, it was like releasing a whole album in to sit on the couch. And it was just like, it's been fun, guys. And it was just like, yeah. It was like silence. The silence was deafening. I was like, okay. And I was
literally.
Just like, all right, well.
Literally, that's what it felt like. And then yeah. to
So you didn't
like,
get to tour it either. You were supposed to, I imagine, go on the road, right?
I was full, I was like, when I say I was a week, maybe a week into touring.
Yeah, me too.
And the last show was so like emotionally bombed. And, like, everybody in the audience just looked like some, like they had just like a grenade had went off by there. And like Guap Dad would come out and try to hype everybody up, and everybody was like sad, dancing. Everybody's like, and then like everything, it was like, I got on stage and I was like, guys, well, this is the last show. And it was just like violence.
Literally.
I was like, it was like that.
And then at our last show, it was like people looking around like everyone was a serial killer.
Yeah, it was like, this is it.
And we felt it too. We were like, this is our last, like shit's going to be like going into lockdown. Like we're out. Like we have to go home. It was really weird and freaky and eerie playing shows that first week of March because no one knew what was kind of happening.
Yeah, so I would. Yeah.
And then like, you know, and I think Steven, like since both of us released our records, both of us were like, all right, we're going on tour. We're doing it. It was like, I'm going to Japan. And yeah, literally nope. Like, it would be like, nope, actually,
failure.
That's not the case. Nope, not doing it. Nope, can't happen. We're like, come on, we can't tour any of 2020. Like, nope.
You remember when Superman shot Zod into the sun? That's how the album coming out. It's just like,
that was so fucking specific. Yep. Just threw it like a fucking just
literally
like batting a fly away. Just be literally. Gone. Nope.
Literally.
Hard literally. Nope.
It was like I feel like I emotionally watched the album like Zod. It just
no. Yeah, stuck in that little mirror of
that
eternity.
Was the album. The album
never
was
again
in the mirror.
Except it went out, it smashed open and won a goddamn Grammy. So hey,
yes.
It wasn't
yes.
it wasn't
so,
for naught, man.
Listen, I'm so glad that our records came out. I'm glad that, you know, I'm so proud of Women in Music Part 3. We're both proud of them. I think it's just
the album was beautiful.
Thank you, Steven. That means a lot coming from you. But I think it's more about just the fact that, like, I love making records, but I love touring more than anything. And so, and like playing live, I love writing songs and recording. I'm like, I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to recording because I'm never satisfied with the way that I sound. So that's a little trying for me. But the second that I have, like, the record is done and I get to, like, play it in front of people, like, that's when I'm truly happy. And I think Steven feels the same way. I feel like we talk about it all the time. It's like playing in front of people and like the energy that you kind of you experience and you feed off of playing live is like nothing else. It's like
that's what you do. That's what we do. That's what the whole point of what we do is, you know. It's like
exactly.
You know, that's where we express ourselves. It's you know, it's important. It's like, you know, like it's just it's in an interesting way, it's kind of like the perfect, it's almost like perfect to like, it's the part where it's like it being taken away in the manner that it has. It's kind of like, I feel like that's as it should be. It's one of those things where it's like, it forces the thing of like, the, you know, the whole thing where you, the way you think you're supposed to, the way you, it was the perfect, like, example of how it's everything and nothing at once when it just got taken away like that. You know, it's just kind of like,
yeah,
all of this work. All of this life's work, and you know, it's like,
and like nothing to kind of.
It means everything, but it means nothing.
Like, it felt like, I mean, and also like releasing it, I think was also like, and it's out.
Yeah.
And it's out. We're like, normally I would call Steven and be like, your record's out. Like, let's go out. Like, do we go to, like, do we go to Six Flags? Like, do we fuck it? Like, do we have a party? Like, what are we not going to do is the better question. Like, so. Not having that and not being able to like celebrate this body of work coming out. And then on top of that, not being able to play it live was just so crazy. And
well, what this presents is the question of like, what makes shit matter, right? Like if you cut the tree down in the forest and no one's around to hear it, did it ever really happen? And so you guys both cut down these massive fucking trees that you spent a lot of time and energy on. Albums are a pain in the fucking dick to make. You did it. You put it out and no one's around. So what it begs the question is like, what is it that you're proud of? The fact that you cut it down or the fact that somebody was there to see it? And it sounds like, or to hear it, it sounds like it's the people. The people and the experience is where the magic happens. It isn't in the cutting down of the tree. It's in the people being able to go, yo, this is nice. I like this. This moves me. And that's where the that's where the magic's born.
But don't get me wrong, it's nice. It's nice to know that you made this thing and people are enjoying it. And I think especially during the pandemic, music was something that I think people clutched to and made them feel not so alone. So I'm glad that we got to give people that.
Yeah.
And we provided that for people, which is huge and like important. But selfishly,
I think that the pain is worth its weight in gold a bit. You know, it's like,
sure,
it's the way that it translates as in is like, you know, like you're putting yourself out there. And I think something that I've been learning the concept of is like, you know, the genuine being honest. And like there's different iterations of like, you know, letting somebody know or like sending something out and all that. But it's like every part of the process, the pain that it brings about, it's, you know, and like even to where I was at one point talking to Lewis Cole about the idea of it feeling almost like postpartum depression once the album comes out, where it's like you birthed a baby. And it's like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like,
it's literal. It is. It's like, it's like giving birth to a child.
Yeah. And it's like, if you're doing it and it's painful, that means that you're doing it right.
Right. Well, I mean, it's like, I don't know how you feel about it, but it's like giving birth to a kid and then having everyone have an opinion on the kid. Like being able to like,
somebody tells me your baby's shitty.
You're like, like your baby is ugly.
Somebody throws a tomato at your baby and you're just like,
yeah,
whoa.
Exactly. You're like, this is shit. This my is baby. Bullshit. You're like, whoa.
Hit with a tomato. You can't do that. It's fucking rude.
You just shit in my baby's food. Like, that's not cool.
Yeah, like, why would you do that?
Why would you do that to my poor baby? But that's what it feels like when I mean, there's also like good things, you know, people say like really nice things, but I'd be lying. And I feel like you feel the same way, Steven. I'd be lying if I said that like the good, I'm good at only listening to the good things. It feels like the bad things are the things that kind of roll around in my head and are like the loudest, like with the loudspeaker, unfortunately. And I'm getting better at it now, I think, as I get older.
But here we go. These are good things. They're like, it's a good problem to have where you're, that's how it's, I think as it should be, you know what I mean? Where it's like the negative will always have that effect.
Right.
But it's one of those things where I would rather hear the pain of trying to, you know, as compared to knowing that a person, it's like, that's what it means to be human, essentially, I think, you know what I mean? It's like,
totally,
you know, you're bearing yourself out there. And, you know,
you'd rather hear the criticism of something on account of something you put out yourself, as opposed to the silence of having never of put no, anything
and
out.
It not mattering.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Is
yeah,
and like no one saying anything, that would also devastate me. But again,
it's an old Sammy Davis Jr. quote, man. Sammy said, "If no one's talking about you, then nobody gives a damn."
There you go.
Yes.
So I probably ruined it. He probably said it way cooler than I just did, but it's something along those lines of like, if they're not talking, then nobody gives a shit.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's LYST. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I got one more question before we let you go, because I might tie it back in earlier. I have one more question. So because we talked a lot about drawing, a lot about the music thing, I just want to know what the pivot point was. I just want to know at what point, because you said this really personal thing to draw, and hopefully that'll always be there. And hopefully I would love to see, you know, a Thundercat graphic novel with the musical element at some point. I'm sure that's knocking around somewhere in the back of your brain. Very much look forward to that as a fan. But I'm wondering at what point as a young person, especially if you're going to school for this shit, right? Mm-hmm. You have these two skills. At what point where you're like, okay, I'm going in on music. I'm just going to go in on that. I'm going to do that more. Was there a moment in your life, or was it just like a gradual, like suddenly
do you have
I'm
like
playing
a
more
sliding
gigs?
Sliding doors moment.
Yeah, someone said, "Hey kid, you're playing bass now. We got the 10 o'clock slot at the what is it? The potato? What is that jazz
baked
joint
potato.
In the valley? At the baked potato. It's
baked
like if you're playing that shit as a teenager,
Boulevard.
That shit doesn't happen accidentally. Like one has to be somewhat proactive, especially
as a young person. So what point were you like, all right, I'm gonna be a musician?
My mom paid me $20 to learn Life Is Just a Game and the Clark solo on Life Is Just a Game when I was a kid. And it wasn't that per se as compared to the, it was somewhere between that and my dad waking me up like, you know, sometime crazy before I went to school, because we had a friend that played, a friend named Cleveland that had a radio show where he played on Jazz Fusion on, I think it was, I don't know if it was AM radio or like, but it would only be between like 3 and 5 AM or something like that. My dad waking me up to hear Jaco, Portrait of Tracy for the first time.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it's like, I sat with my dad. He woke me up out of my sleep. He's like, you got to come hear this. And he played, you know, he would record Cleve's radio shows. And then he, you know, he recorded it. And then the next day, my dad taking me to get the album while I was playing. I mean, of course, I'm playing Super Nintendo and stuff. And literally, like, it was the moment I heard A Portrait of Tracy by Jaco. And I remember being like,
wow,
it twisted me all up inside. And I was like, oh. And it was like my dad explaining to me that that was just one instrument.
Yep.
That's cool. That would blow my mind as a kid. How old were you?
Somewhere between 10, I think 10 and 13, somewhere between there, 10 and 13.
You're in sponge mode. So
that was like, that was your point of entry, was Portrait of Tracy for Jaco? Mine was Donnelly.
Wow. There you go.
I think listening to Jaco was like, it was the first time I'd heard the bass used as like a solo instrument. It, that had never really occurred to me that that was a thing. I always thought of bass playing as like, you're kind of in the background, which I hated.
Right,
I always
like, wanted to be in the front.
Yeah, I was like, just shut up, like keep time, like don't get too, like don't do too many sevenths, like keep it simple. And then I heard Jaco when I was 8. I was in second grade, and my it went Donna Lee was the first song I heard, and then Teen Town. And then I think, what was after Teen Town? I don't remember. But it was like those two songs.
Mm. This is why you guys are pro bass players. I reverse engineered from like Victor Wooten and like Edgar Meyer, and then went back to Jaco.
Nice.
I didn't realize it started kind of with the other way around.
Also, our childhoods were we both had like parents that are musicians.
I was gonna say, if your dad is like, yo, wake up, listen to this.
Yeah. No.
I would hope that he was like a musician of some
Steven's
kind.
Steven's dad's an incredible drummer, and his mother, I mean, I feel like I don't even need Steven to be here. I already know his entire life story. Steven's mom is a flautist. So he, like my parents, both my parents are musician hobbyists. My dad's a drummer too. And my mom's a guitar player, but my parents, you know, my mom loved Weather Report and Mahavishnu Orchestra. So I was kind of exposed to fusion jazz at a really, really young age. And so
exposed.
Yeah. I was like, what is, I don't know what this is, but I like it.
I just see like a musician, like with a jacket somewhere in New York City, be like, Hey kid, you want to see some,
you want to see some of this
jazz?
You want to see this jazz?
No, I'm cool.
Shit?
I'm cool. Yeah. You want to see a couple jazz licks?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it happened for both of us, right, Steven?
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing. Like, good on your dad, too, for being like, yo, here, 10-year-old, 13-year-old Steven, wake your ass up. Here's something really cool. Get behind this. You know, it's amazing how influential those moments can be, man. Because I can think of a lot of people that would be like, Dad, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm a prepubescent teen. I'm trying to sleep. I don't care about fucking like.
No, he knew what he arpeggios. Knew.
Girls only like JNCO jeans. Nobody wants to listen to Jaco. Buy me some JNCO jeans.
Yeah, get out, Dad.
Take me to PacSun. Take me to Valsurf.
What the hell, Dad? Like,
all I wanted were a pair of DVSs.
Oh my gosh,
that's all I wanted. DVSs or ESs were
nice.
The cool ones too.
DC shoes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not gonna take up too much of more of your time, and I have to go to rehearsal. But I, Steven, thank you for being on our podcast.
Thanks,
I
man.
I love you so much.
Great
I'll
to
see
chat
you later
with you,
tonight.
Man. Seriously.
Goodbye, Tom.
I'm going to be seeing him at the Shrine, man, in November, right?
Yep.
Is this the kind of the tour for the record for
Yes. This is the we meant to do that tour.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it
Let's
is a,
try
an appropriate
one more time
album
tour.
Title. It is what it
but
fucking
it
is. Like it
yeah,
could not
it
have been more of an appropriate title. It's what it is, man.
When I tell you it almost, it just trolls me now. It's kind of like you go, like, don't say it. It's just like.
I know. Yeah. It's like, I'm sorry. It's just.
Steven,
it is.
You say it is what it is like 20 times every time we talk.
Yeah.
That's like, that is your. And I say it too. It is what it is. It is what it is.
You know what, man? That was an expression before any of us were born. You're allowed to say it. Nobody fucking owns that. If anybody gives you shit for saying that, it's like, I have a Grammy for it. Fucking.
Yeah. Who cares?
Like, sit down, you know?
Yeah.
It's all good. Yo, Steven, you're immensely talented, man. I appreciate your time and your talent and everything that you've inspired me with. And appreciate you being on our show, dude.
You're the best. I love you so much.
I love you.
I'll see you later.
I'll see you later tonight.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye.
That Thing I Do is a presentation of Cadence 13 Studios.
If you like the show, which I know you do, please be sure to like us, follow us, and leave a glowing review.
Thank you for listening to our show. We'll see you next time.